I've coached nearly 100 women about their screen time, and here's what I've learned. Women actually don't care about their screen time. They care about those things that are impacted by their screen time. Their ability to be patient with their kids, the growth of their business, having time to pursue their creative dreams, their relationship with their husband, the inner peace that they feel, their confidence in themselves, their connection with God, their friendships, not missing out on their kids' childhoods. I'm Alex, and I'm here to help you find inner peace, enjoy true fulfillment, and be fully present. Welcome to the Mindful with Media podcast. I am so excited to have Suzanne Gerstmeier here. I've been reading her book, and I just feel so grateful that she would be willing to come and talk to us. So will you go ahead and introduce yourself a little bit?
Hi, I'm Suzanne Gerstmeier. I'm a wife, mum to four. You can probably tell from my accent. I am from Sydney, Australia. I work as a coach for busy mums, and I'm also studying psychotherapy and counselling. And I've just written my first book called Breaking Free of Busy, A Mum's Guide to Living with Ease and Confidence.
Thank you so much. And will you tell us a little bit of why you decided to write this book?
Well, I guess it really comes out of my own journey. I've always been a really busy person, a really high energy, high achievement kind of person. And a number of years ago, I actually hit burnout and went from doing everything to being on the couch for more than 3 months, where I couldn't even walk down the hallway to put my kids to bed. And that was a huge wake-up call and a huge transition in my life. But years down the track, I realized that I'd actually just, as I'd recovered, I'd gone back to living exactly the same way I had before. And I was just really frustrated with myself. And so I went to therapy to work out what was actually going on. And I read a whole lot of books and podcasts. And I started interviewing women about their experiences. And what I really learned is that we often just lack the skills to understand our own emotional world. So we don't really have a handle on our thoughts and our feelings and our beliefs. And if we don't really understand how to navigate that internal world, then it's very difficult to make any changes in our lives. And I started to really understand how important this was for all aspects of our lives, and about the difference between trying to do it all and the difference between that and just showing up and being authentic in our lives. And so this was really a message I wanted to share with other women. And so I had been coaching women at that stage, and I wanted to put something into the world that would really be a practical resource that could reach a lot of people and that would really take all of the things I'd learned and make it really accessible. So to be able to break down some really complex concepts into ideas that we could actually engage with and actually apply in the midst of our busy lives. So that was really my motivation, is wanting to share what I'd learned and wanting to find a way to make it accessible and digestible to women in the middle of busy lives, because we don't have time to sit down and read a huge tome about psychology and, you know, delve into our psyche or our thoughts or any of those sorts of things. And yet it's really so important that we understand that part of ourselves.
That's so true. It's such a powerful story, your story of being so busy and then hitting that breaking point. And I'm so grateful that you are willing to write a book to make this accessible, because that is no small feat to write a book and get it into the world. And it's been so fun for me to read. So tell me a little bit more about like the different types of busyness as far as like, yeah.
Well, I think there's sort of one thing that I realized in all of this is that there are actually some different types of busyness that we're experiencing. So there's what I call being practically busy, which is when you have the huge to-do list, and that's what we all see. And that's what we see as, I'm busy, I have these, you know, 50 things I need to do today. But we're also busy in other ways. We're busy mentally, when we often have a whole lot of thoughts racing around in our minds, indecision about things, or working out logistics, or remembering details, or trying to plan things. That's a mental busyness. And there's also an emotional dimension to busyness, and that's where we're busy caregiving, and where we're giving advice and support and comfort, and we're nurturing, and we're trying to give support and care. And so it's just it's busyness isn't just about all the things we have to do. And one of the first clues to me that that was the case was that I'd look at what I had to do on different days and think, well, you know, yesterday and today I had the same amount to do, and yet today feels overwhelming and yesterday didn't. So there's obviously something else going on. And I think part of what I realized is that certainly as mums, there's busyness all around us, but there's also a busyness that's inside us. And that's often what's most exhausting. And I regularly poll my community about in what area they're most busy. And it's always mentally and emotionally is what they're finding the hardest.
Yeah.
And once we kind of identify that area of busyness and start to work with it, then it impacts not only how we experience all the practical busyness, but it also unlocks opportunities for different ways of handling that busyness in terms of where our boundaries are and where our standards are. And so those kind of things actually influence each other. But if we just look at our to-do list, we're left thinking, man, I just must be better organized. I need a new planner. I need a new system. I need to be more motivated. But there's actually so much more going on that we can start to work with that will impact the whole picture of how we're experiencing life and busyness.
That is so interesting. It's so interesting, kind of as you were describing those different types of business, the practical, the mental, and the emotional. Just last night, yesterday, I was just feeling, yeah, like exhausted, like you say, feeling busy. But yesterday was Sunday. I mean, I don't work on Sundays. My husband doesn't work on Sundays. We don't really do anything on Sundays besides worship at church and then just hang out. And so, like you say, like from a practical standpoint, I wasn't busy at all, but I realized this week, so my husband is out of town right now, and so my week is looking really different and I'm doing less. Like you say, my to-do list is actually shorter this week because I'm going to be going up and staying with my parents, and so I'm not going to be doing my normal chores, but my mind was racing with all the other things that I needed to be doing. Yeah. Anyways, it's just interesting thinking about how you describe those things and how it was applying to my mental busyness and my emotional busyness of my husband being gone and these different tasks that I needed to do to get ready to go. And okay, well then should I do my grocery shopping on Monday like I usually do, or should I not do it then? Or should, you know, just like the, like you say, the mind racing. And that's one of the questions that I get the most from women that I work with is, how do you be present? Because that's something I talk a lot about, of like, how can you be fully present when your mind is just racing with all of these things you should be doing? I know I didn't like really prep you to talk about this, but do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, for sure. And I think the first step is always to acknowledge that that dimension of busyness is there, and to be able to have compassion for the fact that that is, sometimes it becomes very circular, but it is also part of the work and it is also part of what we're doing. So to, in our estimations of how much we can do, to be able to take that into account and say, I'm actually doing a lot in my head. And so if I'm tired or if I'm distracted, this is a real thing that I'm doing. So I think part of it is there, starts there. But the other things I think really to come back to what our underlying beliefs are as well, in terms of how that's informing what we're thinking. So when we look at underlying beliefs, we often have beliefs like, I'm supposed to be productive all the time, or that I can fill every moment of the day and be productive every moment of the day. Or we have beliefs that I'm supposed to get everything done, that there is some sort of finish line I can reach, or that I need to make everybody else happy, or that I need to get everything finished. And so if we can tap into some of those underlying beliefs, then it just loosens our grip on our own performance and how much we have to do and our expectations around how perfectly we can manage everything. And I think that that just allows us to pull back and to be a bit more grounded.
I love that first tip of being compassionate about, yeah, like you are doing a lot of work in your head. Like you are really busy and it is hard to be present when so much of the work you do is in your head. I think that was really validating for me. And then I really loved, I think that's something that you talk about in your book too, about these these kind of mindset shifts of like, what beliefs do you have that are impacting your ability to be freed from that busyness?
Yeah. And I think part of it too is being able to shift those beliefs. And I often use little mantras in my head, like, I'm exactly where I need to be right now. And often that is very grounding in terms of the busy mind of I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that and I'm going to do something else, that just recognizing I'm right where I need to be right now. There is no finish line. And the most important thing I can do is show up. And I think one of the things that I really want to speak to women as mom of kids who are, my oldest is 22 and my youngest are twins who are 15. And so I can see kids coming at the other end, and I can see the significance, not of what you do, but who you are. And they, you know, how we live is a blueprint for how they will experience life. So being able to make that shift to, it's more than about what I do, it's about who I am and how I show up, and it will be okay and it will be good enough. Those are all things we can continue to remind ourselves of. But I think part of it too is having a game plan for the day and having a sense of, well, I think of it as the mechanics. What are the mechanics of today? What are those essential things that have to happen? So we need food, we need clean clothes, we need possibly baths, we need, you know, some of those essential things. And so you have like a scaffold for the day. And when we think about what is essential, I like to use a filter of what things affect people. So what things will make people stressed, what things will derail somebody else's day, like if the kids don't have the right things packed in their bags, then those become essential because they have a people implication. So just spending 10 minutes mapping out what that essential scaffold is for the day can be really grounding too. And then you can then kind of quiet those other thoughts about optional things that would be nice to have but aren't actually going to affect a person. And depending on your values, that maybe a different litmus test for you, but for me it's what impacts a person. And sometimes that person is me, and it might be that I just need the kitchen to be tidy, and often the rest of my house is a mess, but I like my kitchen tidy just because that helps me feel like I've got a little bit of headspace. And so then that becomes an important priority because it affects me. And equally, if the kids can't find something, then that becomes important to put something away. So if you understand what the bare bones are of the day, then that can be really helpful. And that can just stop that sort of cycle of I could do this and I could do that and I should have done this and I should have done that. You know what those basic things are that you want to come back to. And I have a chapter in the book about your, I call it a lifestyle map for want of a better description. And it really touches on some different areas of life. For example, the tidiness of your home or personal presentation or what you eat, and encourage women to think through what exactly is important in those different areas and what are some trade-offs that you could make if you needed to. And when I've worked through this with groups of women, some will say, you know, it's really important to me that we eat nutritious meals, but it's less important to me that our kids have color-coordinated outfits when we go out. So I know when tensions are high, it's important to me to focus on the food and less on our appearance, say.
So just choosing ahead of hand, knowing what to let go of, kind of.
Yeah, knowing what to let go of and having that conversation or that chance to think yourself about what your priorities are in different areas. And for other families, it might be downtime. So one of the areas is about the pace of life. Some families can do a whole lot of things and other families can't. So looking at those things and saying, you know, my family doesn't like to join in everything, but we do like to really keep our space tidy because that's important to us. And so then when you see somebody else who has a wonderful looking meal on Instagram, you know, then you can come back and say, actually, what we decided was important to us was downtime and having our environment really clean and tidy, because that is important to our well-being. So it just is really a chance for women to consciously think about what their own priorities are and what works for their family, because every family is unique. And it's about identifying what are the particular needs of your family. And once you understand that, then then when you do have those racing thoughts about all the things that you could possibly do, then you think, well, actually, no, I can let go of perhaps, you know, cleaning out the kids' drawers or, you know, making hummus from scratch, because those aren't, that's not what our family does. That's not what our family needs.
Yeah. And that can change season to season too, but yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But I think, yeah, understanding sort of day to day what the scaffold is for your day and understanding what things your family focuses on is helpful. And another of the, we call them busy beliefs in the book, is that you should be on top of everything. And I know from interviewing, you know, hundreds of women that no one's on top of everything, that everyone's laying awake at night, you know, trying to figure out the latest domestic gremlin or all manner of problems. And that's really normal. And so I think we need to understand everyone is making trade-offs, and to be able to get comfortable with our own trade-offs and our own compromises, knowing we're choosing what works for our family, and that's very individual. And I think that all of those things provide some resilience in the face of social media or in the face of should thoughts about, you know, I haven't washed my floors in, you know, weeks, and other people have, well, we're busy making homemade food. So
that's,
yeah, just this
understanding. I think that's totally something that I've worked through, and I'm sure I still am working through, that I love playing with my kids outside. I spend the majority of my days playing outside, and that means that I do the bare minimum when it comes to housework. Like, I do our laundry so we have clothes to wear, and I make dinner because that's important to me, to have a homemade meal. It doesn't need to be like high end, but like a basic homemade meal. But yeah, like bathrooms cleaned once a week on a really good week, like, but just the basic level. Yeah. Basic sweeping, basic, just like the very basics of cleaning you could do. And that's what works for us and my family right now in our season. So I really resonated with that. Like you say, just figuring out what's important to you and what works for you. And then, like you say, if you do find yourself getting caught up in the comparison game or the should game, like just taking a step back and recognizing, like, no, this is what's important for me and this is what works for me. So I think that kind of leads into this. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that another one of the busy beliefs that can really come into play is this idea that I'm going to feel better when task X is done, and that there's going to be some miraculous sense of satisfaction or competence for something is going to come. And just, you know, years down the track in motherhood, you know, no one's showing up at the door with a prize, you know, but it's time, you know, and inevitably that finish line just keeps moving. There's
it,
always
it might
the next
feel
thing
good
that
for
I think,
a minute, you know, we might feel have this like short satisfaction, but it's not long lasting. It's like,
no, it's very brief, and inevitably that thing needs doing again tomorrow. And so being really able to remind ourselves of that when we're falling into that trap, it's like, what is it I'm thinking that, you know, this is going to be terrific when everything's tidied up, and being realistic and honest about, you know, may not be that great even though the task is done. Like, what else is going on for me that I feel like I need to have everything tidied up? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That, I think that can be hard work to do too, right? To dig deeper on that.
And that's really what the book is intended to do, to put some language around some of those things that are going on for us so we can recognize it and then be able to move forward from it rather than being led into unhelpful behaviors or exhaustion or overfunctioning or being overly critical of ourselves.
Totally. I think that actually would be helpful. Would you be willing to kind of give an overview? In the book, you talk about this, there's six different busy modes. Will you, touch on each of those?
Yeah. So as I was saying, like, it's helpful to be able to understand or kind of decode our own behavior to understand what's going on for us. And so when I was thinking about how to do that, I thought, you know, how do we recognize what's going on? So we're trying to identify the basic kind of modes we go into when we're off track and we're doing too much. So the idea is that women would look at these busy modes when we realize we're kind of overdoing it and we want to understand what's happening for us. So I'll just describe each one. So the first one is doer mode, when you're kind of being that productive machine. You're just going from one task to the next, and you're very much, as we said, thinking, I have to get it all done. I'll feel better when the laundry's put away and the kitchen's clean, and you know, all of those things. And so you're probably tired, you haven't taken a break, and you're really operating on this idea that I need to keep going. I just need to be a machine, get everything done and keep on going. So the next one is striver mode, which is really about our standards. And it's when you're trying to do everything to the highest possible standard. So imagine you're making dinner, and it has to be the best, most nutritious dinner that looks delicious on the plate. It was economical and quick. It was the perfect meal. And approaching everything with that high standard, rather than recognizing that some things are more important and need more effort, and other things you can give less effort to. So in striver mode, you're really, perhaps even your standards are exceeding everyone else's standards. So you might be the only one who thinks you need a 5-star meal on the table. Everybody else might be happy with something simpler, but that drive is coming from you, either because of your own kind of ambition, or perhaps even sometimes a bit of fear that we think if we don't do it well enough, things won't be okay. If we don't read enough stories, if we don't spend enough time with our kids, if we don't, you know, provide the most enriching home, or if we don't get enough exercise or whatever, it's that kind of fear of, I'm worried things aren't going to be enough, or my mothering is not going to be enough. So that's striver mode. And the next one is pleaser mode, where we're very much focused on everybody else and keeping everybody else happy, and feeling like it's very much our responsibility that our kids are happy, that our husband's happy, that our community is happy and people like us, and we're thought of as being good and kind people and doing the right thing. And can take a lot of energy kind of anticipating what other people need and what they think, and whether we've inconvenienced anyone, whether we talk too much at the social gathering, whether we helped enough. And it's not really about being a kind person. It's about a level beyond that, where there's some degree of disquiet in us that needs to make everybody happy. And maybe there's perhaps a lack of boundaries around things we can change and things we can't change for other people, and how responsible we are for other people's happiness and things like that. So that's when we're in pleaser mode, where we're really focused outside ourselves. And then there's worrier mode, where we've got that constant stream of what ifs happening in our head, of thinking, what if we're late? What if I didn't buy enough food? What if, you know, what if I said the wrong thing, or what if an expensive repair is needed for the car? And it's just that constant stream, and that kind of, it's like a hypervigilance, where we're really in that kind of anxious loop, and that keeps us very mentally busy. And it often leads to a lot of practical busyness too, because we might want to research to find out about particular topics, or we might want to double check something, or we might want to redo something. Or so that's a kind of a mental busyness, but it also leads to practical busyness. And so does pleaser mode too, because we often say yes when we don't really have capacity, and so we end up practically busy as well. So all of these busy modes, kind of, they all have a dimension of mental, practical and emotional busyness, and they all kind of interrelate. So the next one is avoider mode, which doesn't really sound like a kind of busyness, but it's actually that not uncommon situation where you have something that you know is important and that's a priority, and instead of working on that, you do something that's not important, or you check out with social media. So we call that avoider mode because there's something that you need that needs to happen for you in order to progress that bigger goal. And often we do tend to check out, or we focus on other tasks. And it creates busyness mentally, because we're not where we need to be. It creates emotional busyness because we beat ourselves up because we didn't do that important thing and we wasted time. And then it creates practical busyness because we inevitably run out of time because we still have, you know, dinner to make, and we're no longer trying to do that important task. We're just trying to get dinner on the table, and then we are practically busy, and it does look like busyness, but it's actually begun with avoidance. And so the last one is missing out mode, which is when we're busy trying to join in everything because we don't want to miss out, and we overcommit, where we become mentally and emotionally busy because we feel like we're not doing enough for our family, that other families are doing more more activities, or have more friends, or have other experiences that we don't have. And we get emotionally and mentally churned up in that. And that becomes very exhausting and drains our resources. And then, of course, there is that practical side of it too, where we do say yes to everything because it all sounds good and we don't want to miss out. We want to be a part of things. So these six busy modes are a way of understanding our behavior. So we can say, well, something's going on for me. And we all know when we're off kilter, when we're over-functioning or exhausted, or we're just really frazzled or overwhelmed. So to be able to step back and say, okay, what's going on for me? Which of these six busy modes have I gone into? And then look at, I talk in each of the chapters about what that busy mode is, where it comes from, so why a person might go into that busy mode, and then practically what we can do to move out of it. So that's meant to be a shorthand way of understanding what's going on for us and start to move forward without the years of therapy and the books and the, you know, getting your PhD in psychology, but to be able to grow in your own self-awareness. Because, I mean, we learn, you know, how to get a job or how to manage money or how to contribute in our community and do all these things, but we don't ever learn how to manage our own internal world. And we don't really learn how to understand and manage ourselves. And I think in terms of being intentional about our lives, we really need those skills. We need that insight. And if we keep falling into traps with social media or anything else, we need to be able to understand ourselves and what's driving that so that we can actually make lasting change. And that was the issue for me. I burnt out and I went back to being busy because I didn't understand myself. I wasn't able to recognize what was going on for me.
You didn't know how to get out of it. You didn't know how to...
No, I didn't really know what was going on. Yeah.
Mm. And like you say... It's something we're not taught how to do, yet it's so important because our world is increasingly busy, you know, increasingly focused on hyper productivity. And yeah, just I think there's this hyper focus on productivity, and screens move our life at a faster pace, and everything is just faster and faster. Like you talk about, not only physically, but more so the mentally and emotionally. It's feeling like we need to move at a faster and faster pace.
For sure.
Okay. So you've kind of already touched on this, but is there anything else you wanted to talk about on how social media contributes to a feeling of busyness?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. And I think that what we sometimes don't realize is that everything we consume has to be processed. So when we're consuming content online, even if we're just scrolling through an Instagram feed, you know, it creates input that has to be processed in terms of, what do I think about that? What does that mean for me? Do I need to join in that activity? Should I be doing that? Should I be exercising more? Should I be eating that food? What do I think about that? It kind of stirs us up emotionally as well. Am I doing a good enough job? Why is everybody else doing this and I'm not doing that? Or, you know, that person looks better than me. Or so it's not only, you know, the obvious issues like comparison, but it all has to be processed. It's all input. And I think a huge part of limiting our sort of internal busyness is limiting the amount that we take in. And it's almost like, you know, just constantly eating from the buffet. Your body's got to process all that. You know, so if you're constantly taking in all of this content, all of this stimulation, your brain's actually got to do something with all of that. Yeah. And it takes a lot of mental resources to filter it for relevance and to decide whether to do something about it. And it's, you know, constantly touching and triggering different feelings that you've then got to process or stuff down. And yeah, so we need to think about the volume of content that we're taking in. Yeah. And even, you know, some simple things like, you know, I used to often check my email on my phone when I was in the supermarket queue just because I had time. And I kind of have a new rule for myself that I won't check email or any kind of messages at a time that I can't respond, because it's just an open loop. And if I can't close that loop, I'm just inviting mental and emotional load, really. So I think we really need to be wise about the volume of content that we're taking in and the volume of information and stimulation that we're exposing ourselves to. So that's one point. And the other point is about looking for a good enough example and looking for a good enough role model. So that what we're looking at really is reinforcing this message that people aren't doing it all, that everyone's making mistakes and no one's life is perfect, and just consciously seeking out those role models to just keep reinforcing that message. Yeah, and there's a podcast that I listen to, an Australian podcast called This Glorious Mess. And in each episode, they talk about a weekly nails and fails. So things that went really well and things didn't. So I think, you know, looking for those examples of people who are living the realistic life that we are living and that who are, you know, have the same values as us is really powerful.
Yeah, I think those are really good points of advice and good things to think about, because like you say, I've never thought about that way, that anytime you consume anything, you have to process it. And you think of it as just like, it's all subconscious. Like, I think like you were saying, like, what do I think about this? Do I need to do that? Do I need to, like, all of the things, it's like all subconscious, but it is adding to the busyness going on for you. And that's something that I talk about in a podcast episode I've done previously. I think I call it turn off the noise or turn down the noise or something. And just how, like, there is really good content out there, you know, podcasts and Instagram accounts and books. And I always say, like, I know that I'm adding to it. Like, I'm part of the noise in your life. And so that can be really good. But if you don't take time to be still and just listen to your own inner voice, you're going to be missing things. You know, you have and this inner voice that will help you in your own life. And you don't want to just be, yeah, dictated by constant other people's opinions and thoughts and information. Anyways, I think that's something that time to be still and be quiet, and it's uncomfortable at first. If you're used to the constant noise, like I said, of really good, helpful input, when it's quiet, it's a little bit uncomfortable to just listen to yourself and your own thoughts and be alone with your thoughts.
I talk in the book about this mind wandering practice of just intentionally creating some space to just sit and let your mind wander. And that's the time where your kind of own thoughts and ideas and perspectives emerge from your subconscious, and you start to make connections between things and realize things. And for me, that's been some of the times where I've become aware of, often with my kids, something that someone might need or a solution for something kind of will come to my mind because I've allowed my mind to wander. And there's a whole lot of science behind that. But that's when you tap into those, not just those insights from your inner voice, which of course is there, but also that's the time when your brain is free to join the dots and make connections between things. And you go, ah, I see that now. And those are insights and things that you can't get when you're living at a million miles an hour and you're constantly listening to someone else's voice.
Yeah.
So that's a challenge for being in doer mode or being in warrior mode. Yeah, to be able to step back in and allow that space. Yeah, so important.
I love that, the mind wandering practice. I'm excited to get to that part of the book. Seriously, the more I talk with you, I want to tell everybody about you. I think you just have such good things to share on this really big problem.
Yeah,
so
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I feel like we've talked about how social media and really just podcasts and noise and just in general can make us feel more busy. On the flip side, how can someone use social media in a way that actually helps them tackle busyness?
I think we're wired for comparison and we're wired for learning and growth. And I think social media does give us an opportunity to have some really helpful reference points for our lives. And so if we do have a challenge or a problem, you know, it's really helpful to tap into information from other people. Like if we're having trouble getting our kids to eat well or sleep well, or we want to know developmentally what's appropriate for our kids, there's loads of really helpful information out there. And we're really blessed to be able to tap into that information. And so I think to be able to learn what we need to learn and tap into that expertise is actually a terrific way. And I think a lot of people on social media are very much offering advice for people a few steps behind them in the journey and have figured something out and want to share it. And so I think, you know, there's great opportunity for us to learn from the benefit from what other people have learned and experienced. So I think social media is hugely helpful for that. And then it becomes about finding the right people to follow, as I said before, that are modeling the kind of life we want to be living, and then putting some boundaries around that. And I talk a little bit in the book about, for example, if you're in warrior mode, you might be just constantly looking for more and more information. So you've kind of taken a good thing and finding it hard to put the brakes on and needing to read another article and another podcast and another thing about that topic, when really you know all you need to know, but it's just feeding some anxiety. So I think if we have those boundaries in place, then it becomes an incredible resource, and being able to tap into the brain's trust on a particular issue is terrific. So I think that's really helpful. And I think equally too, it can be really encouraging and inspiring. There are lots of voices out there that will, like yours, that really are helping us to live well. And so I think it becomes about being discerning. And again, the analogy of the buffet table, you know, what we're choosing to sample. The problem isn't the buffet. It's perhaps understanding the best way to use it.
Hmm. And I think, like we were talking about earlier, if you can take some time to, you know, have mind wandering time and time to process, then when you are on social media, when you are consuming content, you are in a better place to say, you know what, this actually isn't helpful right now. I don't need this right now. Or this is really what I need right now. You know, it's, you're better able to kind of differentiate of what you do need at the time and what to set aside and come back for later when you're hungry again or when you need something else.
Yeah. And understanding those things that can drive us towards social media. Like if we're perhaps avoiding some uncomfortable feelings, or we're feeling frustrated, or we're feeling bored. And there's a, you know, the avoider mode chapter has a, you know, a table to identify some of those things and work out what you might actually need. We get in this habit of checking out on social media, and then rather than saying, okay, well, what actually do I need right now? And it might be that I am bored. I might be lonely. I might be frustrated. I might be just finding life really unstimulating in my day-to-day busyness. So what actually do I need, and how can I meet that need rather than reaching straight for social media? And it's you know, really well understood that habits are, they're reliable solutions for recurring problems. Mm. So if every time we feel bored or every time we feel frustrated, we reach for our phone, then that becomes a, you know, a pattern, you know, a rut that we'll stay in because it works. So there's absolutely a need we're experiencing, but it's a matter of just pausing and saying, okay, what is actually my real need here? Is there a different way that I can meet that need? And sometimes even just delaying picking up your phone or delaying doing whatever you were going to do can be enough to break the cycle and to just pause and think, well, what do I actually need right now? What am I feeling? What's going on for me? And what's the most constructive thing I can do? And sometimes it might be picking up your phone. That might be the ideal thing to do. But with them, then at least you're choosing that consciously and you know what it's going to give you and what you actually need. So yeah, I definitely think trying to break that automatic habit cycle by waiting and then asking ourselves what it is we really need.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, well, I feel like there's a lot on this, but like, I think there's a lot of shame around people. Like, I know I used to be in this, but I felt like so, yeah, ashamed that I would always turn to my phone whenever I was feeling an uncomfortable emotion or something like that. And like, even once I like knew that's what was happening, I kept doing it. But like you say, it's actually a really good thing that your brain does that, because it means it's working correctly. Like that is a survival instinct. Your brain is trying to avoid that pain, and it knows that the phone is a really good tool to make that pain temporarily be numbed. And so I think just accepting that, like, okay, yeah, this is what my body's supposed to be doing. it's not actually solving the problem. It's not really helping the situation, but that just kind of can help me put some space between the behavior and my feelings around it, like my that shame. And like you said, just like delaying it, that's something that I do. Like if I have the urge to go on social media at a time that I haven't planned, I just have like a standard that I just have to like write in my journal on my phone how I'm feeling, and then I can go on. So it's like I still can go on, and usually like as soon as I write down how I'm feeling, I'm like, okay, I'm actually ready to deal with this. And sometimes I'm not. Sometimes I'm like, I don't want to deal with this right now. But it's just good to have that little buffer of like, okay, this is what I'm feeling. This is what's going on for me. Am I ready to deal with this right now? Or would it be better to go on a walk or do some jumping jacks or, you know, cope in a different way than through mindless scrolling?
Yeah, and I think we can have compassion for ourselves that this is something we've figured out to help us cope. You know, these are real challenges we're facing, and life is hard, and this is an easy solution, and it totally makes sense that we would rely on that.
Yeah,
it's as you say, it's what we're programmed for, and it works. It's just that it has some other consequences that we may not be as happy with. And I think the other piece is around helping ourselves transition from, you know, that sort of immediate endorphin hit to a sort of slower burn satisfaction of maybe a hobby or investing in our fitness or relationships or those sorts of things. So that's not a quick fix, you know, to shift ourselves from one kind of release or one kind of satisfaction to another. And so having compassion for ourselves around that too, and that we're not failing every time we pick up our phone, and it doesn't mean we can't do it. It's just, you know, exercising a different muscle, and it's, you know, changing an established pattern, and that all takes time and intentionality. And I think it's tempting to think, you know, when we're not present and we're lost in our head or our phone, to think, you know, this is too hard. I can't do it. I can't be present. Well, we have to start in a way that's realistic and say, you know, I just want to focus on being present for this 10 minutes and build from there, rather than thinking I'm supposed to be present 100% of the time. And that's hard, especially when what we're being present to is often pretty challenging.
Yeah.
So I think just, you know, when my kids were little, you know, I, in all honesty, would look at the clock and say, for 15 minutes, I'm going to sit and just be completely present in this game or this thing, and tick that something off my to-do list, you know, and kind of build from there, because otherwise my natural tendency was to do all the chores because that seemed satisfying, or, you know, there was something to see from my time.
Totally.
Yeah, so I think
that's
we can
very
be compassionate.
Relatable, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, like you say, I think it's not realistic to be fully present for really extended periods of time, especially for certain activities. Yeah, just setting really small standards. I think that's something that's been really helpful for me and for my kids too. It's kind of shifted depending on our phase of life. But right now I have special time with my son right before he does quiet time. And it's really good to just have that. It's like 15 minutes where I am fully focused on him. And it feels like it's easier to be present because I know all of my thoughts and my things I'm going to do, I'm going to have a time for those later. But right now, like, my time is with him.
Mm. Yeah, I think so for sure. And if you think you need to be present or you need to be patient or you need to be understanding from now until forever, then it seems overwhelming. But if you think, I just need to do it for 10 minutes, then that I can do.
So that's
been helpful, you know, with a whole lot of things to me.
And I think that also applies to what we were talking about earlier with taking time to just have some silence and not have input. Start out really small with that, you know, just really small pockets of time, like when you're in the shower or when I'm trying to think of other things that you might already be doing, or maybe when you're driving in the car, like instead of turning on music or a podcast, just let it be quiet. Or if you're on a walk, just things that you're already doing when you would normally add some input, just one of those times, try it without input.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Starting small is key with anything, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. For sure.
Okay. Did you have anything else to add about, like, how can you recognize your real need when you find yourself checking out with social media?
Well, I think I have a checklist in the book, but it's really looking at understanding what it is that you want, and there's sort of a what's showing up and what the need is, and then how you might meet it in the book. But so really, the types of things that can be happening are you're actually struggling with what it is you need to do. For example, you may be overwhelmed with the amount that you have to do, in which case it becomes about the practical logistics of how you start small to be able to tackle what you need to do. I think boredom is a big one. So asking ourselves whether we're looking for some kind of stimulation. And so being able to step back and say, what actually does that for me? Is there a hobby or an interest that I can start to cultivate that I can have available for those times when I just want something interesting? And I think we can kind of recognize that sometimes where we're just bored and we're wondering what's happening in the big wide world. So understanding what lights us up, and again, there's, a chapter in the book about what our needs are, but understanding like where we might need to invest in order to get that more organically from ourselves rather than looking for it outside ourselves on social media. Sometimes we're lonely, and so picking up the phone and messaging a friend rather than, scrolling through to see what people are doing, but actually reaching for authentic connection rather than looking for that distant connection that social media gives us through sort of images and posts. Or you may be feeling frustrated with something that's not working, and rather than tackling that problem, we tend to check out. So those are some of the types of things that might be things that we need other than to be picking up our phone. And I guess the last one would be that sometimes we just do need a break, and letting our mind wander or doing something with our body can be really helpful too. Sitting outside in the fresh air, if we're outside coming inside, if we're inside going outside, changing something about our physical state, getting up and moving around, just to start to tune into what's happening in our body rather than what's happening in our mind. So those are some of the sorts of things that we can become aware of rather than just instantly picking up our phone.
Totally, just checking, what is that true need and how can you meet that true need instead of just escaping it and coming back to it later? Fascinating. Yeah, I love that. Any last thoughts today? I feel like you just have so much wisdom on this topic of busyness, and like you said at the beginning, the not just the physical busyness, but also that mental and emotional busyness that really I think a lot of us struggle with more than just the physical. So any last words today?
I think really we just need to be so compassionate with ourselves. I think, we can get caught into performance and trying to manufacture this perfect life for our families and to do everything so well. And we get very hard on ourselves and have these expectations which just really don't serve us. So to be able to be compassionate, which comes more naturally to some people than others. Yeah, I think that's always a starting point. And whenever we're off track in any way, whether we're too busy or whether we've wasted time on social media or something else, being able to be compassionate, because if we start from a place of self-judgment and self-criticism, then it shuts down our physiology and our brain and our emotions, and our capacity to change anything is diminished. Aside from anything else, it's less effective. If we're harsh and judgmental, any kind of change is much more difficult. We need to start from self-compassion. And I think that's a lot of what I've tried to share in the book. And I've shared a lot of stories from my own life and experience. And, and those are things I look at, with compassion. I think, wow, okay. What not to do. Yeah. And I think that's, a huge shift that we can work towards.
Yeah, I think that is huge. It reminds me of, I recently read that book by Casey Davis, How to Keep House While Drowning. And she talks about, she uses that phrase, nobody shamed themselves into better mental health. And I think sometimes we try to do that, right? We shame ourselves into all of these things, and it's not effective. It doesn't work. And so I love that.
No,
Just being
it
compassionate.
Doesn't.
And like you said earlier, these things that you teach in this book, I think you give really practical ways for moms to break free of being busy. But like you were saying earlier, you were saying it's a muscle that you build, you know, that you work on and you improve and you get better at. And so I think your book walks you through that. It will help you do that, but it takes compassion as you're building those muscles and just getting better at these things.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, thank you so much. This has been so great and just such an honor to be reading your book and to get to hear more from you about this topic that is so needed in this day and age.
Yeah, thank you. No, I've appreciated the time to share. And I do have on my website a download which might be helpful to people listening, that just, it's kind of like a cheat sheet for making the day easier. So sort of understanding what those core things are that you might want to work on through the day. And then some of those mindset shifts that might help you to just have that compassion for yourself.
Oh, perfect. That'll be so helpful. Yeah. Will you let my listeners know where they can find you?
Okay, I'm at suzannegerstmeyer.com. So Suzanne is Susanne, and Gerstmeyer, Gerstmeyer.
Okay.
SuzanneGerstmeyer.com. Yep.
And I'll link that in the show notes as well. So that's your website. And then on the website is where they can find that cheat sheet.
Yeah.
Yep, okay.
For sure.
And then where can people order your book? What's the best way to get that?
You can find it on Amazon.
Okay.
Yep. So that would be the best place to get it.
Okay. I will link that as well, because like I said, I've been reading it and it's fantastic. So I highly recommend.
Thank you. Thank you. And thanks for the chat today. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I have too. If you feel like your life is good, but it could be better, I would love to chat with you. The only way for me to explain what I do is for you to experience it. You can sign up for a free coaching session using the link in the show notes.